Hello and welcome to the Game Train podcast. We are now up to episode 30. As always, I'm Callan Davison. Again, joining me this week is not Carl Smith. He is still recovering from his vocal surgery. He can now talk a few quiet words. He said to say hello to everyone, but it's still going to be another episode or two before Carl is back on track. Instead, we have Mark Santamartino here with us.
G'day, Cal.
Hello, welcome to the Game Train.
Thank you so much for having me. Always wanted to be on.
Yeah, our second guest on Game Train.
Second in 2 weeks.
Yeah, second in 2 weeks. Wow, it's getting exciting. Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about your gaming history?
Yeah, I mean, I've been gaming since, well, I suppose it started when I was really young, like 2, 3. I would watch my aunties play the old Sega Mega Drive at Nonna's house, my grandmother's house, and my uncle had the Super Nintendo. So from there, I asked and begged for my 5th birthday to get a Nintendo 64 and saved up all my little dollars and went and bought that with, you know, Super Mario 64, and it all sort of kicked off from there. I've been playing ever since and own all 3 consoles now because I have too much disposable income.
Very nice.
Disposable income. Exactly.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's jump right into the news. Mm. Red Dead Redemption 2 finally got its release date, being October 26th this year.
Another little delay,
but now the game, funnily enough, releases on my birthday.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
What better gift could you ask for?
I know, it's going to be Red Dead Redemption Day that day, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Are you at all worried that Red Dead Redemption is going to overshadow your birthday?
I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about...
No one's going to remember your birthday because they're all like, no, this is Red Dead Redemption Day. I'm sorry, I got to jump into the Wild West. I don't have time for it.
I could have a cowboy-themed birthday party and everyone rocks up in cowboy hats and that. But what I'm worried about is that my birthday was on the same weekend as PAX last year. Mm. And I think it could happen again this year, meaning got to go do PAX and got Red Dead Redemption sitting at home.
Don't get a pack.
Yeah, so...
That's an easy decision. This is going to be the game of the year, surely.
Yep, so October 26th for Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm-hmm. A new Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer dropped, this time showing off the Monsters, Inc. world.
Mike Wazowski. That's literally all I know from that movie and that trailer.
I watched that movie years ago, that one.
It looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cool.
They're really going hard with the Pixar in this Kingdom Hearts. We've had Big Hero 6, Toy Story, now we've got Monsters, Inc. I mean, they're really going into the new age of Disney, which I think is quite interesting. It's going to be pretty cool. It's an interesting world.
But they did that with Kingdom Hearts 2 as well. When Kingdom Hearts 2 released, the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie had just released, and there is a Pirates of the Caribbean world in that one. So could we see them maybe go to like a Star Wars world or an Avengers world?
Well, look, I think that's setting a very, very high bar. I wouldn't be banking on that. You can hope, but I wouldn't expect, given that... Oh, when did Disney acquire Star Wars? Oh, it was a while ago
It was. It was several years ago now. So, I don't know. Who knows? Yep, that would be interesting, but still no release date. But the producers of the game have come out and said they are announcing the release date at E3 this year.
Is it coming in 2018?
Well, they seem to say it's still coming in 2018, so I'm hoping it is.
Yeah, we'll see.
And so, yeah, we'll get that release date hopefully at E3 and another trailer. The Surge is getting a sequel coming out in 2019. This was a Dark Souls-style game. We didn't really cover it on Game Train Podcast. It had some criticisms over repetitiveness in the game, bland environments, etc. So the
sounds like a hoot. Can't wait to play it.
The developers have come out and said they've taken all that on board and hoping to make The Surge 2 bigger and better. So that's 2019 for that.
Okay, I had no idea what The Surge was before you spoke to me about it before this podcast. So I'll have to do some Googling. But if it's Dark Souls inspired, I'm a glutton for punishment. So
yep,
I think it might be up my alley.
Mario Kart fans, real life Mario Kart is coming to Sydney and Melbourne.
I am so excited about this because I went to Tokyo and I didn't do it. I don't know what I was thinking. I spent all of my energy trying to track down little Nintendo bars and cool little like robot inspired stuff. I even went to Nintendo's headquarters in Kyoto, but I did not do Mario Kart on the streets of Tokyo, at least in the go-karts. So if it gets down here to Melbourne, where we're obviously recording this today, I will be jumping on the streets. Although I probably won't do it in the Docklands because... as we've just discovered, it's all one-way streets and absolutely horrible.
I don't think it's going to be on the main roads around here. There's no way that that would be allowed. It would be on some sort of a go-kart track course somewhere. But yeah, that looks really fun. And then also in more Mario Kart news is that Mario Kart is coming to smartphones called Mario Kart Tour and will launch sometime between April 2018 and March 2019.
Which is the biggest release window you could possibly give it. They didn't actually announce that as, here's our game. It was, we have an investor meeting. We've got this coming this year, so don't worry. We're going to earn trillions of dollars from every single nuffy out there with a smartphone. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with it, because Nintendo's really emphasized single-handed play with all of their smartphone games so far. And I mean, we saw that, you know, most predominantly with Super Mario Run. So I don't really know how you make a Mario Kart game work with one finger.
Yeah, I don't know, unless it's tilt controls or...
Yeah.
I really don't know how that's going to translate across.
It'll be interesting, either way.
Yep. All right, and that is the news. All right, now onto the games we have been playing. And Bandai Namco were kind enough to give me a free copy of Dragon Ball FighterZ. Or FighterZ?
No, the coolest looking Dragon Ball game that you've seen in decades. That's all you need to know.
But is it FighterZ or FighterZ?
I say FighterZ.
Yeah, okay, FighterZ.
Because it doesn't come from the Dragon Ball, like it comes from the Z.
Of Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go with that. But yeah, so this game was developed by Arc System and published by Bandai Namco. And
of course, Arc System, one of the best fighting game developers going around.
Yep.
So they know what they're doing.
And Bandai have the rights to the Dragon Ball series. Yeah. So they teamed up and have produced this, which, it's a fantastic looking fighting game.
Now, you've spent a lot of time in it. I only had about a half an hour. So I'll ask you a bit. I mean, what were your initial impressions? I mean, when it was unveiled... What, at E3 last year, we're all pretty excited.
I'd seen like trailers of it, and then when I saw it in motion for the first time last year at EB Expo at Bandai Namco's booth there, it blew me away, just the fluid motion of the game and just how fantastic it looked like. There's always like a difference when you see a trailer to actually seeing a game being played properly.
It's incredible that we're in a time that allows the art style of anime to be so faithfully recreated. It is beautiful. It's sort of up there in terms of realizing the show, like I suppose South Park was when the Fractured Butthole, when Stick of Truth first came out, everyone couldn't believe how faithfully it recreated it. And that's the same feeling I get with this, obviously on a much more faster paced and awesome action orientated stuff.
They've got all the characters looking exactly like they do in the anime. They've got a bunch of the voice actors from the anime as well. Mm. And you can have the Japanese voice track or the English dub, depending what you prefer. It looks incredible. It moves so slick and fast. But a great thing about this fighting game is that it is so easy to pick up and play.
Yep.
Like a lot of fighting games, it's like, oh, I don't know any of the special moves, or oh, what's all the combos? In this, it's one or two button combos. The special moves are just like, you know, you're just down back button. Like if you can throw a fireball in Street Fighter, you can pretty much pull off any move in this game.
Well, that's, and I was super happy with that when I first played it, because I didn't know. I'm normally put off by one-on-one fighters that are 2D just because I find them overly complicated. With the exception of Smash Brothers, I don't really play too many fighting games, at least the traditional ones, and Smash is not a traditional one. So when I jumped in with my mate on the weekend and we just played for half an hour or so, it was great to feel like you were able to pull off some cool combos pretty much out of the gate, although it did descend into a bit of button mashing pretty quickly. But I'd love to go a bit deeper with it.
Yeah, I spent several hours playing this, and I was pretty basic at first. And then later on, I was training like, you know, Kamehameha's into freaking other combos and all this sort of stuff. And it's like they've gone for that, the Marvel vs. Capcom style of 3v3 fighting. Yep. And They nail that as well. Being able to get an assist from like a character you got waiting in the wings, to being able to switch guys out, to be able to force the opposition to switch their guys out by doing a certain move to them and things like that. That's heaps of fun as well. And the roster's not bad. It's got 24 characters at the moment. And I assume more are coming on DLC down the track.
As they always do.
So you got your normal fighters of that staple in every Dragon Ball game. You got Goku, you got life, and there's three different Gokus in the game. So I think there's Super Saiyan Goku, Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan Goku, Goku Black. So there's a few Gokus.
There's enough Gokus.
There's a lot of Gokus. You know, you got Teen Gohan, Adult Gohan, you got Vegeta, you got Cell, Frieza, Boo. You know, all your normal Dragon Ball characters rock up in this game.
As long as I can be Frieza and Trunks, I'm happy. That's all I want.
And
if I can have like 2 weeks of anime where Goku is forming a spirit ball to kill Frieza as well. I still remember watching that every single night, Cartoon Network. You're like, this is going to be the episode. He's finally going to throw that spirit ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you actually heard of Dragon Ball Kai? How they've cut all the fat out of the anime?
No.
So it's about half as long, and they've just cut all, like, for example, that I think it goes over one or two episodes, and then boom.
It felt like it went for an eternity.
Yeah, it went for so long.
I'll have to look up Dragon Ball Kai.
But yeah, so this also has a story mode, which it's a new story. So they've brought another android into it.
Yeah, which is super cool.
Which is Android 21 this time. Mm-hmm. And like Cell, she has the ability to absorb other androids and also other people this time and gain, you know, stronger power and all that. So the story is, you know, trying to beat her. And also there's all these clones running around of all the Z fighters and all that.
Now, I haven't played the story. I was just going full multiplayer. But I've heard from my friend who owns the game that it's really just a pretty flimsy excuse to string fight after fight after fight together. Did you find that?
That was probably my biggest concern with this game was this. Like the story mode itself is good. The story's cool. I like the story. Android 21's kind of cool. But yeah, the string of just random fights between your main sort of, I guess, what would you call it, your story beats gets a bit old. It's cloned, so you're fighting a Goku and a Vegeta and a Gohan, and then the next fight you're fighting a Gohan, a Goku, and a Vegeta.
we love the variety. Yeah, the Game Train podcast.
After doing like slog after slog after slog, yeah. So I'm probably about a third through the campaign now, and I'm at about 5 hours into it.
Okay.
So,
see, 15, that's way too long for me like a fighting game, because at the end of the day, fighting games live or die based on their multiplayer. So it's great to have a good story, but if it's that dragged out, I know I would lose interest.
Well, you don't have to play every fight, though. It's on like a board, and there's all these different boards.
I'm having really horrible flashbacks to Smash Tour, which was the worst addition to the Wii U Smash Brothers ever, but go on.
Okay, yeah. It's sort of, and there's all different fights on the board, and you can move different ways. You've got a certain number of moves, but there's a boss character at the end, and when you beat the boss character, you move on. So at the start, I was going around clearing everyone on the board, and that was getting very sluggish and very repetitive. But then later on, this is probably about 14 boards into the game by this stage, I'm like, no, I'm just going to go for the boss as quick as I can. I started doing that. It sped up everything a lot more. So when I continue through this game, because I'm going to keep going with it, I have enjoyed it. Mm. I'm just going to keep just blasting through the boards instead of just full clearing them. Mm. You get experience off each sort of fight and your characters get a bit more health and all that. But, you know, really, if you're...
Does it really make that big of a difference?
If you're a couple of levels behind, you probably can push through with, you know, your fighting techniques against the AI.
Exactly. Just master the combos, you'll be fine.
Exactly. But yeah, look, it's a great, fun fighting game. Simple to pick up. And if you're a fan of Dragon Ball, go get it. You'll love it instantly, I reckon.
Oh, I was very, very impressed myself so far.
So, what have you been playing on the side?
What have I been playing? This past week has been super productive. In terms of finishing games, I suppose that I got through Cuphead.
You finished Cuphead?
Yeah. Yeah, that was fine.
Wow.
I'm a sucker for pain. So yeah. I loved Cuphead. And it's going to, I suppose, factor into my review a little bit later that we talk about for something else. But I loved it. Even though it was tough, I really enjoyed battling through. And I knocked it out in a weekend, actually. Oh. And just loved it.
Wow.
Every single moment of it. I wish more games employed that art style because I fell in love with it so quickly.
That art style was incredible. I remember when I booted it up here when it came out and I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, again, screenshots and that didn't do it justice. Mm. When you see it in motion on your TV, it just, bang, and the sound bang on as well. Just fantastic.
Exactly. So that's been great. I also finished, I finally finished Resident Evil 7, which I wanted to do as well. Thank God for the PlayStation holiday sale for us. I'm still playing through Horizon Zero Dawn, which I put on the back burner for our review game this week. And I've just started Oxenfree on the Switch, which is very narrative driven. I don't normally play those games, but so I'm sort of trying to work my way into it. I understand it's probably quite similar to the Telltale series in terms of it's just more...
Yeah, I, funnily enough, have finished that in the last week as well.
Did you?
Yes. It's you just make dialogue choices and it goes through the story that way. Can't really talk too much about the story because I don't want to give anything away on what happens.
Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting and the ending is very interesting, actually, once you eventually finish the game.
Well, look, it's no secret in that it's basically a story about four or five friends. They go onto a deserted island or one they think is going to be abandoned. And of course, they get separated and different things happen as you tune into radio frequencies. And let's just say the mystery unravels from there.
Yes.
But
yes.
I'm really liking what I've played so far. And it's a bit of a testament to a game that I went into it cold. I mean, if it wasn't for the 75% off that I saw on the Switch sale.
Yeah, $6 or whatever it was.
Wouldn't have bought it. But I thought I'd give it a shot and... I've been liking what I've seen so far.
Well, that was a Carl recommendation. He was playing it, and he's like, you've got to get this game. It's $6. And we'd downloaded it on Xbox a while ago when it was free on there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, oh, Switch. You know, I can play it anywhere. And I was away.
So instead of playing it just on your couch, you're playing it on your couch lying down.
No. I was heading away to Sydney for the weekend, so I thought I'd download it and play it on the plane and all that, which... brings me on to something else I did.
But I will just say, I didn't realise that it actually has touch controls on the Switch. I don't know if you played that way at all.
No. Nope.
You can play through the entire thing without any Joy-Con attached, no controller. You can literally just point and your character will follow you.
Oh, right.
And you can just select your dialogue options, everything. Which is really, really cool. As like a, because I can't think of too many games that have actually used the Switch's touchscreen. So to see one that at least employs it is quite cool.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So you were going to tell us about this other game.
Yeah, no, actually not really a game such, but why I was in Sydney was I went up to the RTX Expo up there, which is the Rooster Teeth Expo. It's a gaming and internet culture expo.
Yes.
Which it's the third year it's been here in Australia now, and it started off in Texas back in 2011. You know, it was a lot smaller than like a PAX. It was probably about a fourth of the size of PAX, but it's still a relatively new expo, and it was just cool to go out there and check it all out. Like, they had panels, they had a lot of merch. I picked up a heap of merch from there.
Anyone interesting, Aussie developers or otherwise?
They had some podcasters there, just a lot of streamers and people from the internet community doing different talks. So they had, I think, two stages there of people on there. It was just cool to go up and just hang out at another expo over a weekend and wander around and check it all out. They had a lot of PUBG setups there again, which seems to be at every expo at the moment. So I jumped on there.
Mate, if you go into an expo with streamers and internet personalities who probably can't survive without PUBG these days, I don't know what you're going to do.
Well, I tried out the new desert map on PUBG because I've been playing it on the Xbox and it still doesn't have the desert map. So I got to try that out, which was kind of cool. Played some Overwatch there on PC, which was pretty fun. It was a cool little expo, you know. I bought a bunch of stuff, spent too much money again. There was a lot of really, really cool artwork there.
What'd you buy?
Oh, I bought...
You can't just mention that you've bought all these things, but you don't tell us. Give us a rundown.
I bought some figurines. Dragon Ball figurines, funnily enough.
Is that what I'm looking at right now?
Yeah.
All right, you're looking super cool.
I also bought some artwork as well of Mei from Overwatch. Now, this guy had a great setup. So, MikeMillerArt.com, go check it out. This guy had a heaps of Overwatch prints there. Also, a lot of Marvel characters, pretty much pop culture characters. He puts onto these thin sheets of metal. Yep. That's the noise of it right there. Mark's kindly doing. And it brings out the colors in totally different ways when the light reflects off it. And it looks freaking awesome.
Yeah, that is sensational. I'm actually blown away. I'm going to have to check that out myself.
Yeah. So, go check out his art. There was a heap of cool stuff. He had a really cool one of Carnage from Spider-Man. And it looked unbelievable. but I can't really put that up in my living room because of Airbnb. I think they'd freak out about that, and I don't really want that in my bedroom.
Just so, random tourists getting up to pee in the middle of the night. Just like, oh.
See this horrible looking monster. So yeah, and there was a heap of other artists there as well. Guy doing sort of like horror versions of like pop culture characters from movies and that, like the monsters from Monsters, Inc. He made them look absolutely terrifying, like they were in Dark Souls kind of thing.
Okay.
And all this. Yeah, it was really, really cool art. But
not something you'll see in Kingdom Hearts 3.
No, that's right. So yeah, look, RTX, it's a cool little expo. It's going to keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was, you know what, there was a fair turnout of people there checking it all out though, like big lines to get in each day. Yeah.
Well, good to hear that we're getting a bit more support for Aussie gamers and streamers.
Exactly. I'd like to see them do a bit more of the indies though and expand that way, I reckon, kind of like PAX does.
We've had so many cool indies come out of Australia recently. I mean, you've only got to look at Golf Story as a recent success, and of course the guys that made Crossy Road are sort of the biggest examples, but there are so many cool little game creators.
Yep.
That if we put them on a pedestal, they might actually, you know, be the next big sleeper hit, or, you know, become an Oxenfree or something like that, where everyone just thinks, hey, we'll flick you a few bucks, why not?
Exactly. Well, and another game I went back to this week because I felt like I should was AO Tennis.
No one should ever want to go back to
No, this is from an Australian developer, which we should still support our Australian developers when we can.
Yeah, but it's so bad.
But there were several new patches added. And now, right. I had a big whinge about this about a month ago on a podcast about this game.
Sure. Have we said what the game is so far?
AO Tennis.
AO Tennis.
Australian Open Tennis.
I was so focused on how bad it was, I forgot it initially.
I complained that on the Xbox there was no career mode. The players moved clunkily. They'd randomly stop when going for the ball. All these sorts of things which made the game very unplayable, very frustrating to play. All those have been fixed. I played it the other night and actually started getting into the game and had good rallies going against the computer, and it was actually fun.
Okay. Well, that's great to hear.
Yes.
I mean, it's phenomenal because I don't, even though I know patches are a thing and so many games get things ironed out and, you know, a day one patch is almost standard these days, it still irks me a bit on the inside when they've put a game onto a disc and it's not 100% ready, no matter what the game is.
Yes. Yep. So, agreed.
I think it can just put people off, but it's great to hear they've ironed it out. Again, the Australian Open is finished, so I don't know how.
Yeah. Look, as the game is now, if it had shipped like it is right now, I would have had better things to say about it.
But look, we're only a couple of weeks out after the Australian Open, so it's amazing how much they can fix in such a small amount of time.
Yep. Yep,
which makes me think that they were put under some extreme pressure when the Australian Open came to them in October last year and said, hey, we want a tennis game. Do you want to...
The other thing, there's still no Roger Federer in it, though. Like,
what?
You can't have last year's defending champion not being this year's Australian Open title, and then he's won it again this year. So, you know, we need Roger Federer in that game, please, because, he's won the last two titles there now. Anyway, enough of that. We should probably move on to the big review.
Woo!
Of the episode. All right. So this week's review is Shadow of the Colossus Remake. Shadow of the Colossus Remake is here. It is a remake of the game which came out back in 2005 on the PlayStation 2. So, this is developed by Bluepoint Games and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. They've gone and remade this game using the old code but built all the graphics engine again from the ground up.
Yes.
Which is great to see.
I mean, I've heard incredible things. Like everything that I was reading before I played this game was that it's simply one of the best looking games that I've ever seen. Now, I know that you've got your PS Pro and, you know, your 4K TV.
Yes.
I don't have a 4K. I'm still playing on the old 1080.
Yep.
And while I admit it was beautiful.
Yes.
It felt very sparse. There wasn't a lot going on in the world. So I didn't really feel, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a good looking game.
Yes.
But I don't understand the rave reviews.
Yeah. Well, the game sort of revolves around you're this sort of guy and your lady friend has been stricken down by some sort of sickness.
By something, yeah.
And to sort of cure her, you have to go beat these colossi up, which are these gigantic beasts sort of roaming the landscape. And so you sort of just set out on your journey, and it goes from there. It's a third-person game. You sort of wander around, jump on your horse, go for a ride, find a colossus, climb up it, try and kill it, and then move on to the next one. And the
16
next one.
Times.
16 times. 16 yeah. colossi out there, which were all kind of different beasts.
Yeah, no, I mean, with the exception of one that sort of looked like a monkey and then one that sort of looked like a slightly bigger gorilla, they seemingly were varied.
Yeah, there was like a Leviathan one as well. There was, what, like a horse one almost? Well, not a horse.
There were a cool, the ones that stood out to me were, I think it was a goat that you had to go underground to avoid, and there was also a bird where you sort of had to time your jump perfectly to hop onto its wing. They're the ones that stood out to me.
Yes.
But I suppose you touched on it pretty early there when you're just trying to describe the game. It's a bizarre setup with not a lot of setup.
No.
And then you just sort of, you know, you place this woman's body on an altar, and sort of this benevolent voice speaks to you and says, "We need you to go kill these colossi," with no real context. So, yeah. I mean, that was enough for me to go and do it. But I suppose for a driving factor, there's not a lot of background information.
No, there is, and that was the thing.
Like,
there was,
I don't know why I'm trying to save this girl. Apparently, I mean, yeah, by the end of the game, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and you were saying before, the game is quite sparse. Mm. The only enemies you fight in this game are the 16 colossi.
Yes.
And you're spending 10, 15 minutes trotting out to them, riding on your horse, climbing up hills, trying to find these colossi using the reflection of the sun off your sword, which guides you to these colossi, which could get quite frustrating at times trying to find them.
Well, it's very repetitive.
Yes.
And I suppose it depends on what type of game you like. I mean, the way I played it, which was to binge it all in one session, is probably not the way to play it. Because
you went through in one session.
Well, I went out and got some lunch and then I came back. Yeah, so yeah, one day, two sessions. But I wouldn't recommend playing it like that because it is very repetitive. It's almost like you do 16 colossi or you fight 16 in the exact same way in terms of the way you structure of finding out what you got to do. You're just told. There's no sort of open plan to it. It's very linear.
Yes.
It's you're fighting this one, hold up your sword, find out where you got to go, work your way through a very basic maze that is the open world.
Yes, yep.
And then when you finally come up to the Colossus, it's like, all right, well, how am I going to take this thing down?
And each one's differently, and they're like all a sort of little puzzle in themselves in the way that you got to do it.
Yeah, but I mean, I just beat Cuphead, but I don't think...
Oh, yeah, I'll beat Cuphead, okay.
Because I would describe that this game is very much... It feels like a boss rush almost to me without the rush aspect. Like it's literally a game that focuses on boss fights, which is very much what Cuphead is. Yep. Although I felt like there was next to no challenge in this game. I don't know where you sat on that.
I felt there was no imminent danger of dying in the game.
Yeah.
I felt there was no risk that every time even if I fell off the colossi's back and you're like 100 feet up in the air, you still survive.
Yeah. 9 times out of 10.
Yep.
Well, the only two times that I died in this game were actually when I was trying to get to a Colossus and the jump spazzed out and I ended up, you know, falling off the edge in some other way, which really upset me because I knew that there was a trophy for getting through without dying.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, I died, I think, like a couple of times. And again, it was to silly things like that. Or one of them hit me a few times and I stuffed up and died. But majority was just... Okay, cool. All right, let's climb up his leg. All right, jump on his sword. Let's climb up his back. Let's stab him in the head.
Yeah, and I suppose, look, that was... I didn't really have a problem with that. It was more so there were a few that I noticed which, given that the bosses are literally all you're playing this game for, even after you finish it, I mean, you get New Game Plus, but again, you're literally just playing those bosses or you do a time attack mode to unlock
certain things. There's a mirror mode, so everything's flipped.
But I mean, we already said the exploration in this game is... Yeah. You know, not all that valuable. So,
no.
I mean, I never played the original, did you?
No.
So, I mean, I think that this game, if you did play the original, it'll be great nostalgia-wise. And I think as a game, I can sit back and play it, you know, in this day and age and think, this is great for what it is. But having just come off playing Horizon, I'm still playing Horizon and I finished Zelda last year, which are these excellent games with really interesting big bosses, which, you know, at times similar to these Colossus, I don't know, it left me wanting. Is that fair to say? I know it's getting rave reviews everywhere, and I don't want to put people off, because it's a good game.
Well, when looking at those other reviews, I thought, are you reviewing the original game you played back in 2005 again, with it on a 4K TV kind of thing?
Yeah.
Or are you putting it up against what's out today?
Yeah.
No, it's kind of hard, because everyone is giving it these really, really high reviews.
Yep.
And I felt like I didn't get that from this game. And one thing I feel that brings this game right down is that we're talking about they built this game up from the code again.
Mm.
And there's your problem again. You've got the old style engine of jumping.
You've got 2005 controls.
Yes.
With a 2017 party hat.
Yeah.
On top of it.
2018.
Jeez.
The jumping was a bit floaty. And I felt the controls and camera at times when climbing these Colossus were just frustrating. That you were trying to do certain movements around the Colossi and the camera would just cut into the Colossi and you couldn't see what you were doing. You'd fall off and you'd die or something like that. And I was just like, come on, you know, this should not be happening. And it was just like the horse controls are really awkward riding your horse.
Mm.
You have to continually tap the triangle button to keep going.
Yep.
You can't just jump on and just hold forward or whatever. Just little things like that could have been fixed just to tighten it up.
Yeah, it was a bit... the horse got me, actually. When I first jumped on the horse, I had no idea what I was doing. I actually had to go into the control settings just to find out what was going on. I think the most frustrating... I didn't really find the jumping to be all that frustrating unless it had to do with climbing. So...
Yep.
Have you played Last Guardian?
Yes.
Okay. I felt, obviously this game is, you know, part of the same brains trust, or it's developed by the same guys that were behind Eco and The Last Guardian. The Last Guardian being the newest game, but that game frustrated me with climbing controls too when I was sort of on the beast, Treecko.
Treecko, yep.
In just terms of which way I wanted to go. And that didn't really happen all too often in this game. However, in the final boss, which is much bigger, and you've got to jump from...
That's the one I had the trouble with. I was talking about the camera. Yeah. I was losing my mind out here at that boss.
I mean, it's so much bigger, and you've got to do things like jump from, you know, one part of it to the other part of it while still climbing on it. And that's where it got frustrating for me. I missed that jump from one hand to the other about 10 times.
So did I. My controller ended up over the other side of the room. I was not impressed. That's the bit that got me. I'm like, oh, come on. Why is this happening? Like, everything else was pretty manageable, but this last one was just a pain in the butt to beat. And it wasn't because the puzzle of doing it was hard. I knew what I had to do. I just couldn't execute it. And that was the really frustrating part of this fight.
Yeah. Look, either way, walking away from it, because I'm not going to play New Game Plus, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it enough. I felt like some of the boss fights were rather simplistic as well.
Yep.
You know, once you worked out what you had to do...
Yep.
There were a few bosses where they didn't even throw me off. Like, once you find its weak point and you got to stab it in the weak point... You can do that 2-3 times in a row without them even sort of trying to shake you off, let alone any attack actually happening. So I was a bit disappointed that I suppose the bosses didn't evolve in terms of, I know it's very basic, but you can even look at a Mario game where, you know, you've got to get 3 hits in, but every single time you've got to get a hit in, the boss changes slightly in its pattern or the way it approaches you or the weak point or something, and that doesn't happen in this game. And I was kind of surprised given how revered these boss fights are.
Well, the weak point moves a couple of times on some of them, but that was pretty much it,
and
really.
But even then, it's not like you're thrown off or anything like that. It's you've got to start again and find it again, or it's using a different attack pattern. You're literally just climbing from one part of it to another.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I guess comes down to our scores now.
Yeah, I haven't actually provided it. You go first.
Okay, all right. Well, in summing everything up, I thought it was it was a fun adventure. I'm happy I eventually got to play this game because a lot of people had raved about it for years. I know Carl loved the original, and he kept talking to me about it, and I'm like, all right, you know, here comes the remake. I'll play through that. But what let me down was the controls and the camera at times. The Colossi themselves were stunning. Like, they looked great, they moved great. That was the best part of the game. The Colossi, I think, are the lead of this game.
Oh, yeah.
But in the end, I think it's only worth about an 8 because just there is sparseness in out in the field. There isn't enough to do between the Colossi. Well, there's nothing. There's some collectibles.
There's literally nothing to do.
Some collectibles and that's it.
Yeah, I mean,
and
you can hunt for a few lizards. You can pray at a few of those statues, which are just randomly you come across, maybe. But again, having played Zelda and Horizon, and I know it's unfair to judge against, you know, games that have had a decade of game design more behind them, but I felt personally that the world was too sparse for me. Like when I heard that, you know, there was little to do in between the Colossi, I didn't think there'd be literally nothing to do.
Yep.
And I didn't find the story compelling because I don't think it was set up very well. I don't know who that antagonist was at all. I liked the twist at the end.
The twist was very good,
which,
actually.
Which, you know, even though it's a 13-year-old game, we'll save that one for you. But even then, when the twist happens and let's just say you're in control of a different being...
Yeah.
That I had no idea what to do at that point. Yeah. Again, the controls just changed. Nothing was working. There was no clear indication of what I had to do. And then, even though I understand it sets up the following game in Eco, if you hadn't played that, my God, I was...
I hadn't played Eco.
Well, so I'll explain it to you later because I don't want to spoil it for people. Okay. But basically, who you become at the end of the game is the start of the race that's in Eco.
Right, okay. Because I have a feeling they're going to remake Eco next.
Oh, undoubtedly.
It's coming. Yeah. I reckon they'll announce it at E3. They go, hey guys, Eco is now coming remake. Yeah. Everyone will get excited again.
And I'm sure just like Crash Bandicoot, this is going to sell gangbusters because it is a much beloved game from a PS2, which I never owned, but everyone loved. So look, if I was to grade it myself, look, I'd probably give it in around a 7.5, even just a 7. I thought it was a good game at its price, which is, you know, a lower price than a full price game. I think it cost me about $47-48. It was good for what it was.
Yep.
But there are other games I'd play first.
Okay. And that was Shadow of the Colossus. Right, moving on to Backtrack now, the segment when we have a look at back at this week in the history of gaming.
What we're gonna do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
Alright, so this is a great one. I found this one. On the 9th of February in 1990, Super Mario Bros. 3 released on the Nintendo Entertainment System.
One of my faves.
Yep. One of the all-time classic platformers.
In February?
Yep.
I would not have picked that to save my life.
Nope. And, well, Dave and I were talking about in the last episode, Final Fantasy VII launched in January when that launched.
Okay.
Which is just... Yeah. But things were different back then. Like, there weren't launch windows and prime times to drop your game and all that.
Recently, I've only noticed games, I suppose, releasing earlier in the year as a strategic thing in the past couple of years. I mean, we know we're getting God of War in April. Last year, we saw Uncharted pretty early.
Well, that all comes down to your shareholders and they have their first quarter meetings and all that. That's why Kyle and I have been discussing this about the ridiculous week of March 23 to 30, where you've got 5 titles dropping in the week.
Mm.
It's because that's the end of quarter one. Everyone wants to get that little spike at the end of the quarter and also carry on into the start of quarter two, giving them into that spike the first week of April. That's why it's happening, and it's frustrating. But it's interesting looking back in 1990 when Mario 3 released was in February. You'd expect it to release like before Christmas, but
October.
It had already been out in Japan for about over a year before that.
Wow. Okay, so this is the 1990 release date for the States and everywhere else.
Yeah, and which is interesting as well because there's really no talking in Mario. Like, it could have really released the same game everywhere. It wouldn't have really mattered.
Yeah, I suppose it's really basic text, but some of those old games were developed by minuscule teams.
Yeah,
so
true.
Small. I mean, I think even they said the Zelda on the SNES, which is everyone's, you know, revered title, A Link to the Past, was like a team of 12 people or something. So I can only imagine how many. It was probably Miyamoto and an intern managed it themselves.
But yeah, Mario 3 is one of those all-time classics, that one. And I know Kyle's a big fan of this. He's got Mario tattooed on his arm in the Taniki suit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's a big fan of that one. So he would have liked to talk about that, but hey, he misses out this week.
Phenomenal game. Let's hope Nintendo does something different with its next Mario and has the bravado, I suppose, like back then, to have a completely different setting. Because to have it all set up like a play... You know, I mean, that's a fantastic art style. I hope they do something similar or at least something different with Mario next time around.
It feels like they have been every time as well. You go from 64 to Sunshine, and then you go from Sunshine to Galaxy, Galaxy to Odyssey.
I meant more with the 2D stuff, because I feel like we've been stuck in a rut.
Like the new Super Mario Bros. It's just like Mushroom Kingdom again.
Yeah.
Cool, guys. Yeah. No, fair call. Like another Paper Mario, but maybe another spin on that.
Who knows?
Yep.
You can never predict Nintendo. Labo proved us.
Super Mario Labo.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Now, that was Backtrack this week. Now, on to our listener questions. And Sean Fullard, one of our listeners, has written in and asked, what book would you like to see adapted into a video game?
Phenomenal question. First of all, let's put that out there. Look, I don't really read too many books. I'm sure I shouldn't be admitting that on a podcast, but the one I'm reading at the moment very, very slowly is actually Fire and Fury, the Donald Trump book.
Right.
So, okay. Look, it's not Donald Trump's book, but it's a book about Donald Trump's first, you know, couple of weeks in office, couple of months in office. So, God, that'd be interesting. Could you imagine, like, a sim where you're president of the United States or a president of a country? I suppose it's almost like Roller Coaster Tycoon. But
Civilization?
Yeah. I mean, you could just create your own laws and see how that panned out. Yeah,
change other laws or change things. That'd be actually an interesting, like a presidential sim. Yeah.
And you also got to deal with the huge egos in your presidential or in your Oval Office and just, you know, fire people at will and see what happens and deal with the press and the public backlash. It'll be great. Yeah. You'd have an approval rating. You always got to keep it there, you know.
Yep.
This sounds real. I'm boring myself, actually.
No, it's all good. I'd play a presidential sim.
I'm sure somebody out there will make that one day.
All right. Well, for me, this is one that actually has been turned into games. But
okay.
A long time ago. Mm-hmm. Discworld.
Discworld. Okay.
Yes. So Terry Pratchett, an author, he wrote this big series of Discworld books, which is sort of like this fantasy magical world, which is a flat world that rides in the back of a turtle through space. Yep, pretty interesting.
Bizarre,
stuff.
But okay.
Yeah, on the back of four elephants, which are standing on the turtle. That's right.
All right.
Yep. Okay. But it was actually a really, really cool series of books. He passed on a couple of years ago, unfortunately. But I've read a lot of his books, and they released a couple of point and click adventures like 20 plus years ago.
Okay.
I'd love to see like an open world adventure game.
On the back of a turtle on the top of four elephants.
In this world, like it's just it was a very sort of tongue in cheek style. There's a lot of comedy in the books as well.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't take itself seriously. You had crazy wizards and and all this sort of stuff and dragons. But it was just, it was really, really well done sort of writing, and I'd love to see like an open world game in that sort of world. I think it'd be a great one to look at in that sort of style of like just not taking itself seriously.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, we need some fun games. I mean, and that's why I suppose things like, I don't want to say Celeste, which is a cool little indie game, but it's a bit out there and it's more personal.
Yep.
As well, get, you know, some really cool reviews because... And I mean, I love that game. I've downloaded it. I've played through the first couple of levels. I've got to still get through it. But, you know, those sort of more off-the-wall things that do things that you don't expect that aren't just grey and brown first-person shooters or, you know, they're a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. Or
Mario Odyssey.
Yeah. Or, you know, like another, you know, Skyrim open world style game or whatever. It's like, you know, it'd be fun to see like a fun open world in that sort of magical style, but just taking the piss out of itself, really, which this series does.
As long as I don't have to chase a waypoint. I'm so sick of chasing waypoints. I've played too many open world games recently that I'm just, whenever you see it's just a checklist of stuff you got to do. You just highlight one. All right, we got to run 2 hours that way. I'm over it.
All right, that was questions this week. Now, remember, if you want to ask us any random questions on the Game Train podcast, you can get us on facebook.com/GameTrainPodcast or Twitter at GameTrainTalk. And, of course, if you want to listen to other episodes of ours, you can find us on iTunes or Podbean or any other podcast search engine. So, send in your questions because we're always more than happy to answer them. All right, so that brings us towards the end of the episode now. But as always, we like to go through our trains, which are the lame, love, and hype trains.
Okay.
All right. So, as always, kicking off first is the lame train.
The lame train. How lame is this lemon? That's what I want to know.
Well, what's your lame train?
What's my lame train this week? Oh, God, I don't want to say Shadow of the Colossus, even though I gave that such a negative review. I wouldn't say too much. I would say maybe AO Tennis, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm disappointed to hear that it's got such a decent patch to make it work.
Yeah.
So far after release and so far after the actual Australian Open is finished. I mean, we were just talking about it, but wouldn't say I'm happy with that.
That's kind of similar to mine. Mine is just patching day one in general.
Oh, okay.
So,
it's a standard now.
Yes.
Pretty much every game needs a patch.
Yep. I've just downloaded Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Yes.
So I've downloaded the game, but then on top of downloading the game, there is a 23 gigabyte day one patch incoming.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not a small patch.
That is a massive patch.
Is it still a patch if it overwhelms the initial game? Because obviously a patch is like what you put on a pair of shorts or an item of clothing that's been ripped.
Yeah.
Like, but if it ends up being bigger.
Then this is just out of control in size. And then as we were saying, patching to fix your game on day one so it doesn't release broken and all that. It's really starting to get to me that you're expecting it and
It also just delays the game for. I mean, you've bought it, you've taken it home, you go to all the effort of installing it, which, I mean, doesn't take too long on a PlayStation, but still takes a bit of time on an Xbox, at least I've found in my personal experience. And then when you finally think you've got there, you go to boot it up and it's like, oh, we need another 23 gigabytes.
Yep.
That can take hours. So,
yes.
I mean, just goes to show the glory of the Switch.
Hey, exactly. All right, that's the lame trains this week. Now, on to the love train. Okay, for me, it's gaming expos. Going up to RTX in Sydney, it was just great to get amongst the gaming community again, like at PAX and EB Expo, etc. It's just such a fun vibe in those places, and I just like going to gaming expos. I wish there was more in Australia that I could attend.
Can't argue with that. Yep. We need something more significant. PAX is great for what it is, but I still feel like we miss out, maybe because we keep looking to our American counterparts and just pining over our own E3 or a GamesCon from Germany or something like along those lines. But I suppose as our indie developers here get more and more prevalent and they keep having more and more success stories, it's going to become a destination.
Yep.
What do I like for my love train? I sort of mentioned it. I would say games reinventing themselves. I mean, one game that I got to go back to this week, it's probably not super newsworthy, but Resident Evil 7 did something completely different with itself. And I love the renaissance that Capcom has brought to that franchise. And I think we've seen a few different franchises reinvent themselves recently. And I just love that big companies have, for lack of a better word, balls to actually do this with such a valuable IP. And I think it's reinvigorated that series. I played through it and absolutely loved it. I'm going to play through it again in VR once I borrow my mate's headset.
Wow. Yep.
And I would just say, I mean, and we saw it with Shadow of the Colossus again. I mean, anyone that's willing to bring back sort of a more traditional style of game with a beautiful coat of paint, even though that's not really completely reinvigorating it, I'm all for. So
cool. All right. Finally, is the hype train.
Hype train.
What is something you are hype and excited about and looking forward to?
I'm super excited about. Well, I definitely want to play more Celeste, just because I've already got that on my Switch. But if I had to say looking forward into the year, look, it's hard to look past Red Dead Redemption, simply because it's great to have a release date. But yes. I suppose for hype, it's always the unknown for me. And I love all the rumors that we've heard recently about who from Nintendo is working on Metroid. We don't know what the back half of the year for the Switch is going to be. So to me, any nugget of information in that regard is super exciting. And I know that, you know, the Switch's back half is looking like it's going to get Fire Emblem. Yoshi's going to be in there. We don't know too much about. And they're just doing some bizarre stuff. I'd love to know what Retro's working on too soon.
We could see Pokemon coming out this year as well.
I mean, they said in their investor briefing recently that it's going to be 2018 or later. So at least we know that they're aiming for this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say the recent rumors about what's going on with Metroid, even though a little bit disappointing to know that it's probably a little earlier in development than I thought.
Yep.
It's cool to hear that, you know, a team like Bandai Namco, which have done phenomenal jobs for Nintendo in the past on Smash Brothers and alike, is going to have a crack at something a bit different.
All right. Well, for my hype train, it's Kingdom Hearts 3.
It's back.
I was avoiding the trailer as much as I could.
Yeah.
And then people get saying, have you seen the trailer? I'm like, fine. I didn't watch all the trailer. I skipped through it in bits because I just didn't want to watch it in one big hit sort of thing, just to try and still keep some things not, you know, hidden away. And then after I watched that, I went, wow, I'm going to go and start playing Kingdom Hearts 2. And that's what I've been doing. I've put like 10 hours into Kingdom Hearts 2 already in the last couple of days. And I'm just so excited for Kingdom Hearts 3. Like, I really hope it does launch this year. I'm really anticipating E3 for that release date now and the next trailer. And I really hope it's this year. And I'm looking forward to just getting through Kingdom Hearts 2 and all the spin-offs that follow on from that, which there's about 3, I think, after that I've got to play through. Leading up to the release.
Well, there's all the
3.
Points. You've got to get 2.5 well, and 2.5 HD and 2.8.
I've got 2.8 here, ready to go after 2, but there's another game between 2 and 2.8 that I've got to do as well. So there's a lot going on there, but I'm looking forward to getting through all of that before 3 releases this year. So then I've got the whole story there, because I've never gone through it like this before. I went through 1 and 2 back in the day, but now I've done Chain of Memories, which filled in a lot of the gaps in the middle. Like, there was a lot of stuff that helped flesh out in the story, and I'm looking forward to these other sort of sub-stories of Kingdom Hearts to sort of add more into that sort of world of Kingdom Hearts for me. So
you want them to add more? That game is already more complicated than any other game.
These other games will be adding more, so it'll be interesting. And then by the time you get to 3, there is going to be a lot going on. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Mm.
What worlds that Square don't show us off in trailers that we will discover in the game or whatever, which is always fun. And yeah, so Kingdom Hearts 3 is my hype train.
Gun to your head, does it come out this year? It's a hard one.
Actually, speaking back, Carl and I had a bet about Anthem, right?
Yep.
Which actually should have been in news, but I didn't put it in there. Anthem hasn't officially been delayed to next year.
Yep.
So I've lost that bet. I'm not betting on any more games coming out this year. I'm done with that. So I owe Carl $20. So Carl, congratulations on that, by the way.
I'm sure you can pay him in other embarrassing ways. I'm sure he can get you to play through one of the worst games of all time and stream it or something.
Wow. Yeah, he'd laugh at that too. No, I think he wants his $20.
He wants his $20.
But yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on the Game Train podcast this week, Mark. It was great to have you in here.
Anytime, Cal.
Next time on the Game Train podcast, I have no idea who will be joining me again, because it looks like Carl still won't be able to talk in 2 weeks' time properly like this.
It was going to be me, but I'm getting sent away for work. So
yeah, we'll see who pops up on the mic next time, but the review games next time is going to be Kingdom Come Deliverance and Metal Gear Survive. So it is going to be a double review episode on two huge titles which are releasing. So Kingdom Come Deliverance is out now and Metal Gear Survive comes out next week.
Mm-hmm.
So get excited for that, Metal Gear fans. I know you're all waiting to
No Metal Gear fan is excited.
You're waiting to hate on this game something harsh. So yeah, it'll be a double review on the next episode of Game Train Podcast. Thank you for listening.